Kairos is a novel written by the famous German novelist Jenny Eppenbeck. It was translated into English by Michael Hoffman. It's about life in East Germany in the 1980s, the fall of the Berlin Wall and its effects. It's shortlisted for International Booker Prize in 2024. In this episode, Marina Sofia talks about the novel in detail, having read both the German and the English versions. Marina Sofia is a translator of repute and co-founder of Corylus Books, a publishing house that translates crime fiction. She is an avid reader and blogger. Born in East Berlin, Jenny Eppenbeck, the author of the novel, is the daughter of the physicist, philosopher and writer John Eppenbeck and the Arabic translator Doris Kilias. She won many awards and her work is translated into more than 30 languages. Michael Hoffman is a German-born poet, translator and critic. The Guardian has described him as arguably the world's most influential translator of German into English. You can use the link given in the show notes to buy Kairos. Please send us your feedback on this episode via Spotify app or through our website. Welcome, Marina.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You are a publisher, you are a translator, and you are a very heavy reader too.
Yes.
Not only the books that you want to translate, but also books translated by others too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell us about the author, Jenny Eppenbeck. Have you read any of other novels that she has written?
Yes, I've got here a big pile of her books. I actually feel very close to her. I love the fact that she never writes the same book twice. So they're all quite different, but there is always something about memory and how we remember things and how we reinterpret the past. So there is this general theme. And also, I suppose I feel close to her because we're actually quite close in age. She's only a few years older than me and has lived through the transition. She was born and bred in East Berlin and East Germany, and I was in Romania under communism, living under communism, and then seeing the fall of a regime and the move completely to another. So I could relate, especially perhaps with this book, which is so much about the change. She has quite strong sort of social and historical themes in her writings. So in Heimsuchung, which I think was translated as Visitation, she talks about a house over a period of time, again, the history of Germany through a house. Aller Tage Abend is a sort of reincarnation kind of thing. So somebody reappears and tries to live her life again. Go, Went, Gone was very interesting. It was about refugees and it came out at just the time when Germany was taking a lot of refugees. So it was very topical. So she's written a lot of very topical novels as well. But she said she was not able to write about the German Democratic Republic until now. So this is the first time that she's dared to approach this subject. And of course, she does it in a very metaphorical way.
Michael Hoffman is a very reputed German translator, I believe.
Yeah, he's probably the best known living translator after Anthea Bell died of German. He is of German origin. His father was a German writer. He came to England, I think, quite early on in his childhood. So he's, of course, perfectly bilingual, and he's also a poet. So he started out as a writer, as a poet himself, and a critic, and then translator as well. It's quite interesting because this is the first Jenny Eppenbeck book that he's translated. All of the previous ones were translated by Susan Baranowski. And I really like Susan Baranowski's style, and I think it fits in well with Jenny Eppenbeck. So it was a different experience to read his translation. And also, Michael Hoffman is very well known for his translation of authors from the 20s, 30s, 40s, German authors. So from that period. So I think this is the first really contemporary novel of his in his translation that I've read. So again, it was quite an interesting experience.
Tell us about the setting of this novel.
Yeah, so it's almost like a love letter to a city that doesn't really exist anymore, because it's set in East Berlin. And obviously, some of the places and landmarks that she talks about do still exist, but many of the street names have changed, for instance. Yeah, they would have communist names in the book, but now obviously they no longer have. And she talks in some of her essays as well, and nonfiction, she talks about that she still feels sometimes she goes up to a certain point on a road, and then where the wall used to be, she would stop. So even though nowadays there is no wall, she still feels this kind of division. Sometimes in a city, she still can't believe that she can go freely from one part to the other of the city. But also for all sorts of other reasons, she feels it's become gentrified. A lot of people have moved in. The other people have moved out. So it feels like it isn't her city anymore. I think you get this sense of displacement, especially towards the end of the book. She talks about that.
The characters, the main characters are Hans and Katrina. Interesting characters. Introduce those characters to our listeners, and also the theme, basic theme.
Yeah. A lot of readers have pointed out that they're quite unlikable characters, and I think that's the point of the story. Hans is a sort of middle-aged writer, author in his 50s, so they're both East Berliners. He, however, has grown up under the Nazis, so he was a little boy during the war, and then his family moved away, but then came back and chose to live in East Germany. While she was just born and grew up there without her desire particularly. And he's quite well known and, if you like, living quite a privileged life. Which artists did do, as long as they conformed to certain things, they did during communist times. So he's allowed to go to conferences and go abroad and so on, which others weren't. He's got time and to write, and he's quite protected from other social environments. And he's a bit spoiled, I would say, and therefore quite controlling, quite demanding. He's married, has children, but he's very often quite absent from his family. He's got love affairs left and center. And Katerina is a naive young 19-year-old who's also comes from an intellectual family who slightly knows Hans as well, her parents. But she's almost like a blank page that he thinks he can put his stamp on. And she starts following his musical tastes. Whatever he says is good becomes what she says is good. His literary tastes, he makes her read certain things. He makes her listen to certain things. They discuss philosophy together. So he's molding her.
To an extent where he wants to control her completely, you know. Even starts punishing her for certain things.
Yeah, exactly. And that becomes really noticeable when she actually shows some interest in... So she moves away for her job and shows some interest in one of her work colleagues there. And then he's making her feel constantly guilty about that. And yeah, as you said, punishing her. And it's interesting because, as I said, readers in the English-speaking world, many of them say, oh, it's a really difficult, complicated love story and not very nice. And it's hard to read about this difference in age and him being so manipulative and bullying and so on. And that's absolutely true. But at the same time, as I was reading about this, it struck me that it's so clearly, not exclusively, but it's in large part the experience of living under a dictatorship. So it's exactly a metaphor for the German Democratic Republic. And it was at the start a love affair because the Germans were actually more ideologically in tune with a lot of the communist ideals than possibly any of the other East Bloc countries, with the exception of Russia. So at first they were idealistic, so exactly like Katerina is, naive, idealistic, wants to takes everything on board and wants to love all of that and build all of that and so on. And then it becomes more and more controlling and damaging and negative. And he wants to know every minutia of her life. And she starts lying because she starts self-censoring her diaries, right? She gives him not her real thoughts, but what she thinks he wants to hear, which is exactly what was happening to the population in East Germany at the time. So it's, and when people are, again, I heard a lot of readers saying, why is she so passive? Why does she accept all of the bullying? And there is partly perhaps fear of abandonment, but there's also this, the population, again, if we go with a metaphor, the population were complicit in it to a certain extent. There was a certain passivity. So as long as they had a relatively comfortable lifestyle, and she seems to be because she's moving in these intellectual circles that were slightly more protected from the day-to-day, they could put up with some of the less savory aspects of life in the German Democratic Republic. So it's, to me, it's very clear. And and given the fact that she has talked in other places about how she feels about the breakup of the country and the life. In fact, it's interesting that in some of the West German newspapers or critics have accused her of a certain nostalgia for the East. But it's interesting, it was the Western newspapers. And again, it's interesting that in all of the German reviews of this book, they all picked up on the metaphor. While I haven't seen that so much in the English reviews of the books. They say, yeah, that there is a parallel and so on. And I'm not saying that it's only about the love affair is only about the German Democratic Republic and its fall, but it's a pretty strong connection.
One of the significant incidents in the book is that fall of Berlin Wall. And that too, the book is in two halves and you can see the change. It gets mirrored and, the behaviors change.
Yeah, and this is it, because I think there's the mirroring and the fall. So the actual historical events, because they're living as part of the history. But then there is also the sort of unspoken things in their relationship that also mirror very much the unspoken and unsaid but implicit things that were going on in the East German society.
I was also curious about the title, Kairos.
It's ancient Greek. I think it was like a minor god as well, but it was also used to mean the correct time or the right time to do something, to take action. And it's the god is supposed to be a god of luck and opportunity. And as she describes it in the book, he's represented as having one single curl of hair on the front. So you can only grab the luck once. But then if he's gone past, he's completely bald at the back. So you have nothing to grab onto. So it means that the moment comes and goes. If you haven't grabbed it then, it's over. But it's interesting because originally, I believe it was just the right time for doing something. It didn't necessarily mean that it was good or bad. But then later on, it began to be seen as the god of good fortune. But actually, clearly, this love story is not just good fortune because it nearly destroys her in the end.
It's definitely not about good fortune. Even the writing style, she writes one sentence about what he feels. And again, next sentence, the frame of reference changes and she writes about her too. That's a very interesting style.
Yeah, exactly. You get both of their points of view. And that works so well. There is that scene where they've just made love for the first time. And I think he says something like, no, it's, oh, that's as good as it ever is. And she says, oh, this is going to be like this forever. And it's just so clear how they're so different and view the same thing so differently. It's wonderful. Yeah. Oh, yes, here it is. It will never be like this again, thinks Hans. It will always be this way, thinks Katerina. And it's one right after the other. Yes. But the style of not having quotation marks and of going freely between one head to another, head hopping, is actually quite characteristic of her. She does that in a lot of her books. Yeah.
You said you read the German version too, along with the English version, right? Any comparisons?
Yeah, it's interesting because, as I said, coming back to Michael Hoffman as a translator, he's the kind of, there are two types of translators. There's a they often say there's the translators who are like windows and the ones that are like doors. So the ones that are like windows are very sort of self-effacing. They try to be completely transparent and give you as much as possible the flavor of the original, right? So not to interfere too much, not to bring too much of themselves. Michael Hoffman, in all of his interviews, says exactly the opposite. He says, you can't take yourself out of your translation. You're always going to be bringing your own experience, your own style in. So he's at least, you might as well embrace it. So he's like the door of translators. Open the door and you go through and it's him and his style as well. Some people don't like that because they think there's too much of his own personality. I think that some have protested, oh, he's using certain language that wouldn't perhaps have been at the time or things like that. But it works. He just tries. So he's quite playful and he tries to find expressions that will work, even if it's not the exact translation of that word. He wants to give you a feel for the book and so on. So I think he's succeeded in this one, but he's certainly more of a risk taker.
See, you are a publisher too, and of course you are a serious reader. When you are publishing these translations, you will read them with a very critical eye. So anything particularly attractive about translation in this book?
I did really actually enjoy some of his willingness to take risks. And I think he does a very good job of using those long sentences that Jenny Erpenbeck has. And it's often also quite humorous. So he's managed to capture some of that humor, that example of their contrasting views. I think particularly that passage when they're from their diaries, for instance. And again, what actually happens, what she's writing in the diary, or she doesn't write anything. There is that scene where he's written so-and-so on that day. She hasn't written anything and so on. And that's quite humorous in the original as well. And I think he's managed to capture that humor as well. And I really like, I find Jenny Erpenbeck, as I said, I've mostly read her in German, but I find her style very clear and very pragmatic. It sounds complicated when you say, oh, it's long sentences and there are no speech marks and she hops from one head to the other. But it's all very clear in the original. You don't struggle to, oh, this feels like very experimental fiction. And I think, again, that it's quite an achievement in a translation to keep that feeling quite clear and not confusing.
Now, please read a paragraph or two which you really liked, an excerpt from the book.
Yes. Okay, I hope it's not too long, but it's the bit where she talks about the city that is disappearing. What once was familiar is now in the process of disappearing. Familiar good, familiar bad, including the defective or the inadequate, which Katerina is fond of, perhaps because it comes closest to being the truth. Instead now, perfection is marching in, which will eat up or wipe out whatever is unable to resist it, from homemade clothing to the tatty tenements on Prenzlauer Berg, from the dodgy paving to words for things that no one will want to own anymore. Smooth, flawless surfaces will render obsolete and forgotten everything that is ephemeral. The bread will taste different, the streets will be full of strangers walking past strange shops with strange money in their pockets. The parts of town where Katerina once felt at home will never again be as tranquil and as empty as they have been all her life. Already the eastern districts have started to smell different. Clean and nicely scented West Berliners are inspecting streets that are named for the trade unionist Wilhelm Pieck, the Bulgarian communist leader Dimitrov, the socialist minister president Otto Grotewohl, all names that mean nothing to them. They'll use the word grey to describe the section of the city that has no advertisements. And when Katerina walks round in the West, she feels like a bad copy of the people who live there, an imposter, a cheat, liable to be exposed at any moment.
Thank you for such an insightful and wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much for inviting me.